because Spike Lee said Superman, Spider-Man, the Justice League, and the Avengers are all imaginary, someone had to step up and make something that was better than anything you could imagine, which is why we're here. My name is Andre Blaze, and this is My Africa Podcast, and today we're talking with probably one of the greatest solo musicians to step out of Nigeria. I would flatter her a lot more, but I get the feeling she hears quite a lot about that. Asha, how are you doing?
I'm well, thank you.
Okay, now I'm going to find out a few things about you before I get really, before I go much deeper. How do you deal with who you are versus who you're perceived to be?
That's a good one. I try to manage it. I try not to think much about myself, and you know, and I think that keeps me, you know, on the straight. It's hard, but I think I'm safe compared to others, you know, because I'm introverted, you see. So most of the things I do is usually, if I'm not working, I'm with my family and very quiet, or I'm at home, you know, with friends. So I think it's manageable. But the big question is, how do you cope with what people think
of you,
and what you think of yourself, which is pretty, it's not easy.
Do you ever find that you have to marry both opinions occasionally? Especially given the fact that you're a performer and most of your art goes out to the public.
Well, I think sometimes it helps to marry them, because I think I have an underinflated idea of myself. And then when I, you know, when I read a comment or I hear someone and say something, and oh my God, I forgot, you know. All right, I get it. That's me, okay. You see? You know, so sometimes it does help to, you know, to listen to what people are saying. Just a little, you know, what works for you. And let it just stop there. I don't go too far. I don't take more than I should.
Okay. Let's go back to the beginning. The very beginning. Now, most people don't remember anything before they were 3 or 4. So I'm not going to ask you about growing up in Paris, but I would like to know, what was Alagbole like when you first set foot here? What are your earliest memories?
Playing football with my brothers and other kids in the field in front of our house. We lived in a block of flats in Festac. And so Festac was, you know, all with neighbors, laughter, was always happy. When we didn't have electricity, we would come out in the evening, and you know, my brothers had buckets, and I had my the cream tube, empty tube of cream, and I would sing. So it was always jamboree. It was happy memories, although I mean, that was Lagos. That's the area. It was, you know, there were people readily available to help, to take care of you. So it was happy. It was a happy surrounding. It was happy early age. For me, if you asked me how was childhood, childhood was pretty hard because I was the only girl, and there's too much for an only girl to do. I had to concentrate. I had to not only concentrate but take care of the house, prepare to be a wife. So I had
the little woman.
You know, so I don't think I was the happiest little girl. But music was always my solace. Music was my escape.
According to most of recorded history about you, you supposedly met music through your father.
I think so, yes.
Yeah, you got exposed through his collection.
Yes.
Your earliest memories, I mean, I can tell you my earliest memories of music. My father had one of those old record players, and I would regularly go up there and put everything in. It's a Fats Domino, Elvis Presley, Miles Davis.
Well, allowed you.
He allowed me.
You don't touch.
I wouldn't say my he dad, allowed you don't me as touch much his. As he wasn't there when I did it.
No. I was only allowed to go at the photos on the vinyls and dream.
What did you dream about?
I would just imagine the lives of the artists I was staring at. I remember vividly the picture of Marvin Gaye on this sleeve, and he had a black raincoat, and it was raining, I think, and he had a sad face. He had a smile, but he had his sad eyes, and I could feel the pain. And perhaps because I was going through pain too, you know, whatever pain a child can going through, which is really not physical, it's just being, it's hating being under someone else and, you know, and having to take instructions from adults. I just felt, you know, I would dream. And there was Bob Marley with his, you know, his locks. I just, what is going on with this man? I want to be where he is. You know, he had this, you know, he had this pose that he, like, he was singing, he was jumping, and his locks were flying. I just, there was so much power from that photo, and really it did great things to me, because it immediately took me straight to the stage, you know, and in front of an imaginary crowd, and I always wanted to be there. So that was what kept me. That was what I looked forward to. You know, that was my all. That was what I wanted to do, and I couldn't wait to get there.
Okay, we're going to leapfrog forward into the future. Well, the past now, but the future for you at this age in your life. StarQuest. There are a million different versions of events. I mean, everyone has a different story of how things went, but I'd like to know from you. Getting up there, a younger Asha, still filled to the brim with dreams, and slinging your guitar. What did you fear the most?
Rejection. But I was rejected.
How did you deal with that?
And immediately I understood that I still had work to do. And I was happy, actually, that I didn't go through, because I knew I needed to work more.
Most people, upon being rejected, typically react with resentment.
Yeah, but no, till the moment they called the winners, I was still scared. I thought I would pass through, because I could hear whispers in the crowd. And the winner is so that didn't even help matters. But when they called someone else, and, you know, immediately after the shock, I just still in the building, I told myself, really, you're lucky, because you need to work.
You were scared.
Yeah.
Of winning.
Well, no, right after they called the winner, and it dawned on me that, look, you still have work to do.
So this gives you an opportunity to get that done.
Just, you know, because they didn't call me. I thought they were going to call me. And the audience didn't even help matters. They were whispering my name, and I was almost peeing my pants. So once they called the winner, there was a relief. I was shocked for a minute, but then there was relief. I knew, look, you still have to work. You know, you still have a lot to do. I didn't know if I would be. I wasn't sure I would be able to deal with all that attention. You know, so it was very good for me to go back on the ground and really work on my craft. I knew I needed that space. I needed to breathe. I still needed to see how things worked, you know, in the industry.
Okay, so transition from then to when your first album came out. I was on radio at the time, and I don't think I'd heard the album. I was forget how I look now. I used to be a terrific hip hop head, so I was listening more to what was going on with 16 bars and rap lyrics. But I heard B-Banker. And that worried me. It worried me in a very strange way. I couldn't understand how there was music that was that. I think the word that readily comes to mind from that year is liquid. I hear music, but I see it in, mentally I see it in blocks, in patterns. This was fluid to me.
Yeah, 16 bars, remember?
Yeah, I was regimented. So this is new to me. I didn't understand how that sort of music could have existed, and I didn't know about it. But even as I say that, 100+ million Nigerians also woke up to that realization. And you became even bigger than, I mean, not to down anybody, but you became bigger than you possibly would have been even at StarQuest. How did you deal with it then?
Well, like I said earlier when we started the interview, it was very important for me. I think with losing StarQuest, it taught me a lesson of humility. I needed to be humble. I needed to go back and work. So with all that, you know, on the ground working, meeting people, and just learning how to do it, how to sing, how to, you know. By the time Bibanke came, I wasn't even expecting the success of Bibanke. It was just a story that happened, and I wanted to write about it. And when people started, oh, but going on about the song, I was just, okay, all right. Do you like it? Thank you. I didn't expect you to, but thank you. I mean, you know, you just never expect, for me, because I'm always, oh, before it comes out, oh, I'm very critical. Oh, I could do this more.
This could have been better.
You know, everyone says I should just leave it as it is. Oh, but it's too simple. The lyrics are too elementary. But I sure know that's the power, you know. And so when people started to react the way they were reacting, which was positive, I was just thankful. And then another lesson learned again, you know.
Okay, now, one of the things I noticed while looking you up, and not to sound like a stalker, but I had to look you up, obviously, is I can't help but notice the fact that Alagbole is one of the neighborhoods in Lagos, if not Nigeria, where Islam and Christianity reside very comfortably side by side.
What is Alagbole?
That's the area in that's the area we now call Festac.
Are you serious?
Yeah, that's what it was called back then.
Alagbole?
Yeah.
Back when?
As early as, I think after Festac 77, the names started to change.
Oh my God, I never knew of that.
Are you serious?
No.
At all?
No.
Okay, well, so score one for me then.
Wow, awesome. Okay, Alagbole, cool.
Okay, so being in a place where two different religions, which in in today's historical reference are sadly disparaged and, you know, apart from each other, being in a place where those religions lived side by side, do you feel like that might have influenced your, not just your music, but the way that you saw things?
Very much. And I also, I come from a Muslim and Christian family and
really?
Background, and I actually had a stint with Islam. I was a Muslim, you know.
How long did that last for?
Well, I think perhaps for about 2 years or three. I was after high school. I lived with my grandparents. My grandparents are Muslims and from Lagos Island.
Yeah.
So yes, it did influence the way I see things and the way I write as well. You know. And it influenced the song Away.
I figured.
You see, because just near where I used to live, there was a mosque, and there we had is it the minaret? Or who's the guy who
Muezzin? Yeah.
Who calls out?
Yeah,
you know,
calls out the prayers.
Prayers, and you would very early in the morning, 5 o'clock. Allah, yeah. You know. That was amazing. Very, you know, it just inspired our way. So, yeah, I you know, Islam, Christianity is always going to be part of my history.
You're one of the few Nigerian artists who actually observes hiatuses between albums. From the creative standpoint, that's supposedly going to help you recharge your batteries and everything else. But I'm more curious about what you do. I mean, this is post tours, and while you're still on that hiatus, what are you doing? I mean, are you tapping away at Xbox and reading a book? What's going on?
Well, there's a lot of reading. There's a block. What the hell do I do? Am I allowed to say that?
Please go right ahead.
What do I write? My brain is fried. It's nothing. It's
You've
just a big.
four shows a week, every week. So you're burned out.
Exactly. And you've given everything, like everything on stage. You see, and sometimes I'm unable to watch, the recorded. Because I'm like, why did you do this? You know what?
I could have done that better.
No, not even better. But why did you do that? Why, in God's name, did you sing like that? You could have been much more prettier while singing. But it's the moment, you see. We have to catch it. Mm-hmm. And nobody cares if you have a cold before the concert. Nobody cares if you have just had your heart broken. You have to go and give it 200%, you see. So after the show and the tour, trust me, I don't even want to listen to music. Nothing. Don't bring... I don't want to do anything musical. I just need to... it's like recovering.
So what fills that space for you?
Books, friends, and travel. I don't even want to travel by airplane anymore. I want to go on the road trip. Mm. You know, I want to go back to the beginning, simplicity, where I walk with my feet and just enjoy and touch things. Be real, you know, just live normal. That's the word. Live normal. You see, for about how many days, about 200 days, we've been perceived as gods,
really? Yeah.
And divas, yeah. And you know, some people come to you, they cry like, what just happened? And people want to touch you, they want to kiss you. And then when all that is done and you're alone, it's and you don't have those people no more. And the reality...
And you crash.
There's a crash and there's a block and, you know, and you just need to go back to recovery.
Wow.
That's what happens.
It's an amazing process. I had never thought about it that way.
And that's what happens.
Growing up, I mean, being born in Paris and... Growing up here in Nigeria, which one of these places do you first think of as home? I mean, given, of course, the fact that you live in Paris at the moment, primarily, where do you consider home for?
Lagos.
Really?
Oh, yes.
That's interesting.
Oh, yes. What? Why? Why are you surprised?
I'm not as much surprised as I am intrigued.
Okay, you're impressed.
You're intrigued. Like, it's Lagos is difficult. It's different. Every time I spend time outside of Nigeria, I get back to Lagos. I feel like I'm crazy because I leap out of a place of regimen and order, and I dive back into this unpredictable maelstrom of just activity, and everything is happening at the same time.
Exactly.
But I love it.
Oh yes, I think Lagos is one of the best places. I used to tell people, look, forget about it. When you come to Lagos, we're going back to the beginning. I don't know when maybe it was when Moses took the guys across the sea, but that is how Lagos is to me. Drop all that fancy attitude and come back to the beginning.
Lagos has no tolerance for your changes.
Lagos is even cool. You want to go elsewhere in Nigeria?
I should know. I grew up in Port Harcourt. Believe me, I know.
You see, Lagos will humble you. Mm-hmm. And Lagos will give you stories. Lagos is where it's not all refined. Although we want a good life. People deserve to have electricity, light. Just like when you go out, you see things. I think life will go easy and there will be commas and people won't have to stress 10 times. But really... I have to always come back to Lagos to get the kick, you know.
Yeah.
I know.
For that spark.
I need that, you know, ginger. That, you know, how they say it. Elsewhere, it's all slow and ballerina and all gliding. But Lagos is
a fast-paced marathon.
It is.
Yeah.
You know.
It is that.
So, yeah.
Okay. How much of you would you say goes into your music?
All of me.
Always?
I at least 90% I try. It has to because maybe that's why, you know, there's the hiatus, because I want it to be well done, you know, from the writing to the sound, I need it to be well done. I know my fans expect more from me, and you can't fool the people.
Yeah.
You see?
Yeah.
They listen, they can hear. They can hear when something is patched together and, you know, hastily put together. They know. So I try to put, you know, all of me into it.
Would you say that the inspiration for your music comes from you as a person? Like it comes from your experiences, perhaps?
Well, a lot of it, because I'm still very young, you see, and I haven't experienced much in life. I'm speaking like an old woman. Gosh. So wrong. All right. I think a lot of it comes from shared experiences, from television, from books, you know, people talking. Like the last album, a lot of the inspiration came from just traveling.
That would
and
be better
sitting, soon. You know, at airports, long hours, and just looking at people and their lives, couples, you know, individuals, just random like that, you know. But and Lagos inspires a lot of my music. You know, Lagos, there's so much to write, you know, about Lagos. From Lagos, it's life, you know. That's like I told you, it's the beginning, you know. It's where everything is basic. It's, you know, we have to work 10 times to achieve something than the rest of, you know, the much more developed
part of the world.
Amazing. Do you see yourself ever leaving music for anything else, or perhaps broadening your creative input into other fields? And if so, where would you be looking at going?
I would like to act. Yes.
That took me by surprise.
Why? You don't think I can act?
Your manager's in the background. She just mouthed something at me.
What did she?
She says you're interested in comedy, really?
Well, not on stage. I can already see the eggs coming. Let's not get it complicated. I would like to act. I would like to do study something else, you know, other than music. I don't know, you know, you just never know. But I would like to do something else. I like to do something else. Who knows?
Have you ever considered writing, perhaps?
Writing.
A lot of your fans insist that the one thing they'd like to see from you would be something you wrote. Perhaps not music as much as it is a musical mind interpreting imaginational reality alternatively.
I would like to, but for now I'm happy writing lyrics and just creating, but I have respect for people who write. Yes. You know, I read books. I know a good book.
Who are your favorite authors?
Oh.
Let rip.
Well, let's start with Chimamanda.
Absolutely.
Chimamanda. I like Chinua Achebe.
Yes.
Who else? I like Zora Hutton Jones. She wrote Eyes Were Watching God.
I don't think I've read that.
It's a very good book. What else? I like a lot of James Bond.
Ian Fleming?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, and the new ones too by William Boyd.
Yeah.
Yeah, Solo. You know, is it, what's it? Carte Blanche?
Yeah.
I love it. It's so many writers. Echo Umberto, he wrote.
Yes. I know Umberto.
Well, yeah.
Amazing.
A lot of books. But I love Chimamanda. She's an amazing woman.
I think she is too. I first stumbled into her on Purple Hibiscus.
Oh yes.
And it was just so different. Mm-hmm. I mean, outside of the Wole Soyinkas and Chinua Achebe and a few others. I mean, there's this one author I'm trying to remember. Probably shouldn't say it on a podcast where kids might be listening, but it was a book called The Crying Sounds. Yeah.
What is it? Is it horror? Or?
No, it's not. Oh, trust me. As far as horror goes, the four authors I respect. Stephen King.
Yeah.
Clive Barker.
Okay.
Anne Rice, sort of. And most recently, it will be a tie between Peter Straub and Joe Hill.
I don't know those ones. Only Stephen, I know.
Really?
Yeah.
Stephen is amazing.
I haven't read his books. No. I should.
Can I recommend something to you?
Please.
If you're ever going to read a Stephen King book, you should read... Stephen King fans are going to kill me for this one because it's such a difficult call.
He has a lot of books.
And I've read quite a bit of them. I think the best thing you could start with is possibly Pet Cemetery. It gives you a sort of idea of how the man's mind works. And it's from then on, not much he does will shock you.
Okay.
Oh, but look at us roving off. I was going to ask you a random question. So we have these stock questions that we always ask on our podcast. And my first is, if you could recommend anything on earth, anything, what would it be?
Oh, you have to throw something at
anything.
Me.
Anything. A book, a movie, a lifestyle change, hair products, footwear, umbrellas, whatever. I know. It is such a weird question.
Ooh, wow. A book.
Which?
Any book. Oh, no,
really?
It's true. That's a bit out of it.
What book comes quickly to mind?
I will go with their Eyes Were Watching God.
Their Eyes Are Watching God.
Yeah, I think it's by Zora Houghton Jones. She's good.
Okay.
She's very good.
Okay. I'll look that up, and I'm going to make sure I put that as a footnote on the site so you guys know where to go find that. Mm-hmm. Okay. Second of our stock questions, and this is more my way of just messing with people.
Okay.
What do you think about cats?
I think they're cute. And they can be really, they can be wicked as well. They're not so nice ones. But I love cats. They're nice. I just think they're cute. You know.
No. Do you have any pets at all?
I do. Dogs.
Ooh, nice.
Two Lhasa Apsos.
Ah, yeah. Beautiful. I like canines. I haven't had great experiences with mine, but... I think they're more of a responsibility than I was hoping for, but I love them anyway.
They're actually, yes, they're a responsibility. Mm-hmm. And I think it teaches you also about yourself and how you can take care of, you can take care of a pet. Mm-hmm. I think they bring some kind of joy to your life, you know. Of course, they're children, you know, but talking from someone who doesn't have a child yet, I think they bring joy. I like them. They make me... I always look forward to coming back home to see them because they're very cute and mischievous. And I like to take care of them, make sure they're okay, you know.
Okay. Awesome. Speaking about children, you knew I was going to jump on that. Future plans.
Children. Well, we'll start with one child. Family planning.
Don't wind up like me.
Okay. Yes, I would love to have... A child, children, why not? I'm scared though, but I'd like to.
Why?
I don't know. You see, when I was a teenager, I was a little bit of trouble. You see, and they're cute when you know they're little.
And when you only have to brush up against them once or twice. Yeah.
Oh my God! And they begin to talk about their space, their privacy. You know, and honestly, I don't know how to. I'm a child myself when it comes to children. So I it scares me. But I would love to.
What's your relationship with your parents like?
Well, with my parents, I think it's cordial. My mom especially. I'm very close with my mom. Mm. And it's close, you know. My family, we're close, definitely.
Now, I read that you are the only girl.
Yes.
From your parents, and you have three brothers?
Yes.
What was that like? I've got an elder sister. Yeah. I've got an elder sister and two younger stepsisters. Yeah. And But the phalanx in my family is mostly male, so it's mm-hmm. it's a very testosterone-driven family unit. Mm. Mm-hmm. Did you ever feel like you had to be like the boys?
Well, I wanted to because I thought they had it easy. Hmm. And they had friends. I didn't have friends. I only had one friend who was bigger than me. She was, I think, 2 weeks older than me, but she beat the hell out of me, you know. So, you know, so it was hard. You see, it was a hard friendship. But my brothers would go out whenever they wanted. They would play football. I didn't like football. I just wanted to, you know, make the same racket and play in the sand. But mm-hmm. I couldn't. I had to take care of lice, my hair. Mm-hmm. I had to braid my hair, which was always painful. You know, you had to go through all that, how do you call it? Almost like slavery. You know, you had to stand on a stool to
fit
cook
the stereotype.
The food. And when I finished school, that's high school, I went on to live with my grandparents. And so there were even more men in the house. And I was the only girl. So I had to cook for everyone. Like, you know, I was always like protesting, but it was always a one-man protest and no one would listen. Like, oh, look at my hands. They have veins. Oh, should the girl have veins? I'm working too much. You know, I had to stare everyone's ever. You know, I was so small, you see. And this is what my grandparents, you see, growing up with old people, mm-hmm. they heal you, they, you know, tell you you're good. You know,
but of course,
and then
that doesn't change what you
break
have to
a
do.
Plate.
Oh, wow.
Like, what is she even doing that I can't do? That's my grandmother. She said, what is she even doing that I can't do? And then my grandfather would wake up in the morning, say, calls me. I'm always there. And he says, I want this food. And then I bring it. Oh, it's just salty. I have to go do another one. Like, don't I have a life? Honestly, when I after high school, I had no life. I had to stay with my folks. So I had new friends. Perhaps that's why I'm pretty introverted, because they didn't allow me to have it.
Do you feel like, do you feel like looking at the trajectory of the generation that you represent, do you feel like that has a lot to do with the lifestyle choices you've made? I mean, you've remained pretty much impossible to clasp into a stereotype for the majority of your life. You've followed passion, where habitually children from the 80s are taught, no passion. You do this because that's what your parents say. Mm-hmm. But you followed passion. You followed your heart as opposed to convention. You've chosen to go in the direction of what you yearn for mm-hmm. from within. So I wonder, do you feel like maybe seeing all that could come from following the regular, the norm, made you so scared or unwilling to go that route that you went in the opposite direction?
I think from an early age, I knew I didn't want to, I knew what I wanted to do. I knew I didn't want this kind of life. You have to grow up and go to school and get married, just like that. I want to get married, but I want to meet the right person. And, you know, growing up in a family where it wasn't all that rosy. You see, we children had to see a lot of things going on that weren't nice. And I thought, you know, I said I wouldn't want to do this. I would have to go with what I enjoy and really want to do. So I think that was the push. You see, that was the push for me. I needed to break out. And to break out, I knew I needed to be independent. You can't be dependent on people who you want to dictate to. You have to get out and now be, you know, a master of your own. Mm. And that's what I had to do. I had to find the way out, and my guitar got me that ticket. The guitar was it for me. I had to go to learn. You know,
How long did that take you?
It took me about 6 months. I didn't learn all. You can't learn everything, but it was enough to get me on the road. So when I started going out performing, you know, I was slowly, surely getting my freedom and getting out of what I didn't want to. You know, the family system that I didn't want.
Are you happy? I mean, as a person, and this is a question I'm forced to ask myself every day. I don't like to ask it, but mm-hmm. I do. And every day I'm required to demand of myself the honest truth about me as a person. And some days, the answers differ. But it's a question I'd like to ask you. From the core of you, as a person, looking back at your past, looking at the possible future and the evident present, are you happy?
I'm very happy. I'm content. I can sleep and be rest assured, you know. I'm very happy. Every other extra is what we put on ourselves, but really deep down, I'm grateful, you know. It's not by my doing alone, you see. I can say I want freedom, but if it's not there, a lot of people want to be free, but when they can't, that's sadness. I can tell you today that I am, you know, I've gotten into a lot of not so pleasant situations, but I'm out, and I don't know what the future holds. But at the moment, right now, talking to you, handsome.
don't believe the hype.
I am happy.
Last question. You wake up tomorrow morning and your online accounts are shut down.
Oh, no, don't go there.
No.
Don't go there. Don't go there with me. Is that the money one? is it the online money or the Twitter?
No. This is.
I don't care about the Twitter, but not the money one. this interview will be something else. You can now ask me if I'm happy.
That just opens a whole new question. That just opens a whole new vista. Okay. An item of curiosity, and I know you absolutely don't have to answer this, but this is the penultimate question. What are you making right now? I mean, on the average.
Oh, in terms of money?
Yeah.
You know, they pay taxes now in Lagos. I pay my taxes, Andre. I do. No, don't go there with me now.
Okay, we'll leave that one blank. That has been blanked out.
You know, when they see me, they don't go with the papers. They, it's you. All right. So they slap me. They don't just give me the slapping like in the middle of my face.
The biggest tax paper ever.
So I pay taxes.
Okay. So let's go back to our original question. So it's tomorrow morning you wake up and let's say there's a problem with online banking and you can't access money via your ATM. Or online or anywhere else. Mm-hmm. And you've got the equivalent of 1,000 naira mm-hmm. left. Mm-hmm. What are you going to spend it on?
Spend it on? Mm. You see, Janet, this is why I said, let me just go to the market and be a market woman and have my cash in hand where I can see it and store it somewhere safe. In my bedroom.
Janet's looking in the background like, no, no.
1,000 naira. Oh,
1,000 naira.
I'd take a Coca-Cola, cool one. I haven't had Coca-Cola in years. Very, very cold. Because just 1,000, what are we going to do? Hey, we have to leave.
And you have to be happy.
Yes. But after the Coca-Cola.
We'll deal with reality.
We'll think about what next.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Andre Blaze. This has been My Africa Podcast, and the amazing Asha has been in the studio with us. Asha, thank you so much for making our time.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to this episode of My Africa Podcast, which you can subscribe to on iTunes when you search for My Africa. Visit www.myafricapodcast.com for more episodes and other ways to listen. You can find and like us on Facebook as My Africa and follow us on Twitter as @MyAfricaPodcast. I'm Andre Blaze Henshaw, and I'll bring you another great interview in just 1 week.